Welcome to the Mojo Podcast with me, Richard Stokes, and it's great to have you here. Whether this is your first episode or your 50th, yes, incredibly, today we reach the 50th full episode of the Mojo Podcast. Now, this is a place I created for you, a place of insight, of inspiration, and I hope also a lot of interest. We meet here every 2 weeks to hear from fascinating people with a mojo story to share. So what is a mojo story, you may ask? Well, we have all probably felt our mojo is low or lost at various points, and hopefully you've all experienced getting it back. And I ask people how they manage this, how they get that magical essence, your mojo, back. And in this series, I've been talking to business and community founders about what mojo means to them as an entrepreneur and as a leader. And it's been a delightful series so far to be part of. I'm learning so much, and I hope you're getting great benefit from it too. The feedback has been fabulous, so we'll certainly be talking to more founders in the future, as yes, I absolutely intend to make at least another 50 episodes of the Mojo Podcast. Today marks the penultimate episode of the fourth series of the Mojo Podcast, and have I got a cracker in store for you. You've heard from a few founding partners in this series. Laura and Kate from Liberty Hive in episode 3, Jen and Sally from Craft in episode 4, and today I have another dynamic duo of guests. They share an abundance of lessons from their successful careers and from their 9 years as founders. And what makes for a good founding duo is right up there in our conversation.
We are quite similar in our values, I would say, but we bring different things. So we are very much yin and yang, which is, I think, the success of our partnership.
This week, I welcome Anna Barras-Brown and Cal Whaley, the founders of Shine for Women, to the podcast. Now, I know them and their coaching and human development business particularly well for a few reasons. Not only have I seen at first hand the impact of their work on hundreds of former colleagues of mine whilst at WPP, the advertising giant, I now also work with them as an associate, delivering their work to an array of amazing clients. So yes, I know them, but here's the thing. I discovered so much in this open, honest and powerful conversation. They really go all in, so I know you'll get a lot from this one. We talk about what drew them together, how they force themselves to go to market instead of procrastinating, how they take advice and act on it, well, most of the time, and how they've learnt the crucial founder lesson of letting go in order to grow. All this and so, so much more. I'm really excited to bring this episode number 50 to you. And as ever, all I ever ask for in return is for you to do me a quick favour and leave a review for this episode over on Apple Podcasts. 2 minutes of your time makes a huge difference to the visibility of this podcast, and I really want as many people as possible to benefit from these founder mojo stories. And any shares on social channels also make a big difference. Okay, let's head over to my 50th mojo conversation with Anna and Cal from Shine for Women. Welcome back to the Mojo Podcast, and I'm absolutely delighted today to have not just two wonderful guests, but two really good friends of mine join the podcast, both of them based in the lovely county of Dorset in the UK. I've got Anna Barras-Brown and Caroline Cal Whaley. I always call her Cal. Welcome, guys. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
It's very exciting. Seems like a long time coming. We've been talking about it for a while. So lovely to finally make this happen.
I know, it's great to pin down, and we're going to get into your diaries being really busy and what that's all about as a founding duo. I always start here though, really intrigued to know, where are your mojo levels today, 1 to 10? Anna, let me start with you. Where are you?
Mine is quite high. I must say I'm full of ideas and creativity. Some might call it overbearing, but I'm kind of, whoa, you know, I have lots of ideas and I love it. And I also have solved one problem with one child. And then the other one is having her tonsils out as we speak. And I'm very lucky that my husband went there and is doing it all with her, because I would by now have fainted. So my mojo is really high.
All right. So put a number on it for me, Anna. How high?
10.
Well, I love it. Oh, 10. Yeah. Excellent. Excellent. All right, Cal, follow that. Well, where are you today?
What I love about the fact that Anna and I is that we alternate. So one of us is always 10 or any particular day. So actually, I have to confess to being a little lower, having a few tech issues today, which is always something that frustrates me. And I'm doing the back-to-back-to-back meeting thing, which is never my thing. That said, I got up at 5:40 this morning and went for a run. So wow. I have my smug mojo scoring, I think is probably the fair thing to say. I'm around an 8, actually. The day's getting better and better.
Wow. And it sounds like it started incredibly with that early run. Get that in early.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Get that in early. Don't do it very often, but what I do, I do love to feel smug.
And look at the result right there, the high mojo. So great. When I say that, I mean, it came very quickly to both of you. This is where I am on this level. What does the word mojo mean to you? Because I'm just on this mission to really discover what it means to so many different people. Anna, again, back to you. What's mojo mean to you?
For me, it means being ready to conquer the world and feeling invincible, you know, feeling, and maybe it's a bit naive, but having that feeling of, you know, I wake up and I'm excited.
Wow. Ready to conquer the world. That is an amazing energy, amazing, amazing feeling. I love that. And as someone who, and we'll get into this, who's worked with you a lot, I know that. I see it every time we work together. So I get that completely. And Cal, over to you. What's mojo mean to you?
You know, it's just one of my favorite words. I just love it because it's one of those words that makes you smile, whether you can't help but make me smile, really. But actually, for me, what I realized with mojo, it's been in alignment with my physical and my mental energy. It's when the two things come together. I could rarely tell you that my mojo is at its best if one of those is not working, actually. So it's definitely the alignment between my mental and physical energy.
Right.
Yeah, and when they are, that's when I'm invincible.
That's when you're conquering the world.
That's when I'm conquering the world.
Yes. And I love that sense of alignment or balance. Both of them, you know, various different energies that we've got, both need to be in a really
absolutely
good
state. Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay. So what I'd love to do is we're going to talk about the business that you co-founded 8 years ago. Is that number about right?
It's 9, I think. Yeah. Is it 2013? Yeah, 9 years ago.
9 years ago. Yes. Okay. Yeah, yeah. So when Shine for Women came together, and this fantastic business that's doing amazing things, getting more women into more senior positions, making the corporate world more human, you know, doing amazing things. Anyone that's experienced Shine will know that for themselves. But what I'd love to understand is what brought you both together to do that. Was this something, had you known each other for years and you had been talking about it for ages? What was the genesis for Shine starting?
Well, I went to one of my husband's courses, who runs Upping Your Elvis, and I decided that I wanted to create my own business again, because I was working as an associate for a long time when my kids were young. And I had this idea, Shine, making the world more human, the corporate world, working with women. But I absolutely knew I couldn't do it on my own. Because I know I'm a good starter, but I'm not a good finisher. And I'm also not good with detail. And I know my strength. And then I asked Chris, I said, what shall I do? Because I definitely don't want to do it on my own. And then he said, why don't you call Cal, who is a very good friend of Chris, also the godmother of our daughter, but always has been more a friend of Chris. And we had been sailing together and stuff, but still it was, you know, his friend. And Cal, you can tell your story yourself, where you were at the time.
Yeah, Anna caught me in a moment. I was in a juice fast, actually, somewhere in Sussex. So I was definitely quite depleted when she called me. But no, joke apart, I had just left Nike, actually. So I'd been at Nike for 17 years and I had literally just left. And I'd taken two decisions. One is I was going to do nothing for a while. Mm. And the other thing is I'd say yes to anything anybody asked me to do. Just, you know, whatever. If somebody wants me to do something, I'll rock up and do it. So Anna called me and she told me about her idea for Shine. And I said, well, I've never done anything like this. I've been actually working with young girls and women in Africa in my job at Nike Foundation for the last couple of years. So I was very passionate about what young women could achieve. But in terms of what Anna's vision was for Shine, I'm like, I don't know how to do this, but I'm really happy to come and help. And I think a week later, we were sitting at the bottom of Anna's garden and designing Shine.
Wow. So you knew a bit about each other. You'd met kind of socially. But Anna, I'm really fascinated about this. As you said, I knew I couldn't do it by myself because you understood in it yourself and your strengths. And you reached out to someone, but someone not, you know, you didn't know exceptionally well. You hadn't worked together before. What allowed you to do that, to that vulnerability, I suppose?
It's a good question. I think I was absolutely sure, you know, because I had been on my own. You know, first I was a director in a company and had like 40 to 65 people all over Europe. Then I was on my own for a long time and I knew I didn't want to be on my own anymore. I also knew what I was good in, you know, which is product, sales, and leading a course with somebody. But also that I wanted to do with someone. I never wanted to lead a course on my own. So I by definition needed a partner, and I wanted a partner who is different to me, you know, who brings different skills. And that's why my husband at the time said, what about Cal? You know, Cal, we are quite similar in our values, I would say, but we bring different things. So we are very much yin and yang, which is, I think, the success of our partnership. Yeah. So not that we are not friends, we are friends and we have fun together traveling and we've only done that once, but we lovely because we're women, but I mean, we love going to a spa and hanging out, you know, but I kind of knew I needed somebody who is not like me, who is different, but similar.
I think a lot of my guests who are co-founders have recognized in each other a values match, which is really important at the core, but different strengths. And that seems to be, it seems to be the secret sauce of successful co-founders, meaning you're going to get on enough because the values are the same, but you bring different things. And I'm guessing different networks as well, because, you know, let's go back to the beginning. And Cal, you were saying you were designing Shine from scratch. How was it getting this thing, which is an idea, kind of Anna's idea, which you got involved in? How was it taking that to market? What was the first sort of moment of the, you know, the rubber hitting the road and testing it out? How did it go?
Yeah, so, I mean, Anna came with a huge amount of thoughtfulness and insight into what it might look like. So she already had done a huge amount of really good work in this space. So product-wise, Anna had a huge amount of clarity around it anyway. I think, you know, what's interesting is deciding when are you ready to go to market? When are you ready? And actually, you know, after several months of tinkering around the edges, we went, you know what, we've just got to put a date in the diary. Let's just put a date in the diary. And we literally picked a date, January the 15th, 2014, remember it very well. And we just went out then and started talking to people. So it was actually having that stake in the ground that actually forced us to go and you know, and get bold. Because otherwise you can spend, I think, we could have spent so much time just tinkering and playing with the content, and, you know, and this way we just got out and made it happen.
I love that. I think that's a great advice to people who are maybe sitting there with this idea and going, you know, it's got to be perfect. Yes. But we all know that holds people back, doesn't it? And Anna, so you had, you know, all the product, you got Cal with you. When did it first start really getting some traction and momentum? You went out there and told people about it. What were the first kind of client interactions like? Did it go really smoothly, or, you know, what happened? What can you share?
Well, I must say that I'm quite a good salesperson. So when I set up my own company in 2001, I convinced my good friend who was the CEO of L'Oréal at the time in the UK, and he got me coaching clients. And I did the same with Shine. We had Karen Blackett here for a weekend, and I told her about it. And she said, I sent you some women from Mediacom at the time. She was the MD of Mediacom at the time. So I think we talked about it quite eloquently, and we were passionate about it. And I was absolutely sure that it will be magical, because all the tools we have in Shine, I had used for the last, 14 years, you know, with clients. So I only picked the best. So I knew it would work. And I think talking eloquently about it, being convinced that it works, being passionate and asking people, saying, will you send me some women or will you come? And Cal did that and I did that. And we had a cohort together and then we ran it. And we got a journalist as well on that. That was quite brave. So we had somebody from Style, from the Sunday Times, on the pilot. Maybe I wouldn't do that again, but I mean...
No, that was a crazy
move. It worked.
That was a bold move.
But, I mean, it was,
that is a bold move.
We took a risk as well.
Right, yeah. So some risk taking in it. And yeah. I want to just dive into that word, coming back to you, Cal, passion. Can you tell me, I know you worked for Nike for many years, amazing roles, but do you recognise a difference in the passion doing what you do now versus then? Or is it all kind of, is it a similar level?
I mean, I think for me, I have to feel passionate about what I do. So I felt passionate about what I did at Nike. I felt very passionate about what I did at the Nike Foundation. But there is something extraordinary about getting up every day and knowing that we are going out to enable women to feel extraordinary, enable women to forge their own path. So, and I think what's incredible or what's so different about it probably for me is that it's very tangible. You know, when you're working in a Nike, your consumer is somewhere out there in the universe, you know, whereas the women we work with are, you know, in the room with us or on Zoom with us or whatever it might be. But you just see these tangible moments where women just light up, and you know, and that's incredibly infectious. It has the most incredible personal impact on me when I see that happen. So it's a different form of passion, but it's you know, the reaction that you get and the instant almost gratification is lovely to be around every day.
I feel that. I recognize it as well, in terms of, you know, when you're with people and you actually see what's going on. And then I'm guessing you're hearing stories or keeping in touch with people and seeing the progression of that impact, that people stay in touch with you and kind of let you know what's happened.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's one of the fun things. Anna and I were walking down Oxford Street not long ago and somebody came rushing up and went, Anna, Cal, you know, and you're like, whoa, who's this? You know, and it's literally when people take the time to, you know, stop you in the street or email you or whatever and tell you what impact you've had on their lives. It's a pretty special and privileged position to be in. We're constantly going out to keep in touch with people and find out what's happened.
And they go and get in touch with us. I mean, during COVID, we had a lot of people reaching out to us.
Right. So sort of reconnecting, Anna, was it? Yeah. Or looking for advice?
Well, also saying, because of you, I find that easier than other people and stuff, you know. So we had, we had a lot of really close connections over COVID, which was lovely.
And today we're going to talk a lot about, you know, the evolution of your business and where you are now. And we've sort of covered that sort of, you know, you coming together. But what I'd also love to talk about is, obviously, you're doing the work and you're getting these clients and it's the two of you. At what point did you think or realize, hang on, this is growing, this is working, we're getting that traction, we're going to need some more people? And how was that decision, by the way? Could it have just stayed, you know, the Anna and Cal show forever? Or did you have a vision for it's going to be a certain size? I'd love to talk about that.
Well, it's a very embarrassing moment in our career where we ran a workshop, a program for Wonder Man at the time, now Wonder Man Thompson. And at the end of a very successful workshop with Julie Jackson, who is head of culture at WPP, and Mark Reed actually there because he was the CEO of Wonder Man, one woman got up and said at the end of the workshop, don't you think it's time that you hire a project manager? And we were like, oh, you know, what, you know, first we were like, why, you know, what's wrong? And she said, well, you're both here now since 3 days and nobody's answering your phone. You know, and we were like, maybe she has a point. And that's how we hired Alice, that you know, who is lovely and who helped a lot, yes, actually bringing Shine to the next level. So we then hired glorified client, manager, PA, everything. I mean, Alice was like everything. And I mean, that's, yes. Yeah, we were basically asked by our clients, can you please hire a project manager?
I love the brutal honesty of that feedback. Of don't you think, you two have been working with us for 3 days, but I've got some feedback for you at the end of it.
Yeah. And the irony, of course, is we spend our whole time working with women to have them think about who are their allies, who do they really need to have surround them, who do they need to support them. So we spend our lives doing this. And it was like, maybe we need to do something.
A bit of our own medicine.
It was a bit of our own medicine, as we still get every day.
Indeed. And people often, other founders have said to me, that first employee, incredibly important, but also really hard to get that first person, because of that sense of, until that point, you've both been doing everything. As I said, you know, you're doing the project management or not when you're actually delivering the work. But how was that for you? I mean, I know Alice and she's an amazing person, so maybe it was really easy, but just that idea of giving a little bit of it up and away.
Like Christmas. It was like the best thing. We thoroughly enjoyed it. Yeah. It was the best, you know, we were like, oh my God, why didn't we do that earlier? But we were very lucky finding Alice, who is like a jack of all trades. Yeah, so she's incredible because she's so versatile and she has lots of different backgrounds, including hospitality and sales. And, you know, so we were very, very lucky. And I found her again through personal connections down here, because she worked in hospitality before. So it was a good friend of mine who said, you know, you need Draper. And I'm like, who is Draper? Alice Draper. And I'm like, okay. And we interviewed her in the garden and we knew we had struck gold.
And so you brought Alice in and she starts to take over a lot of the things that I'm guessing were the things maybe you didn't particularly like to do or weren't your strengths?
No, it was just a helping hand. You know, she helped with organizing, you know, PA tasks, like organizing calendars and travel and everything, but also she helped with the clients acquisition and running programs and logistics. I mean, her role was amazing because she had lots of different, you know, it was, and she was very much one like us. Again, same values, similar energy, probably more than me than Cal, but I mean, she worked really well with Cal and really well with me, which is, you know, you know, a skill in itself as well.
And we were traveling a lot. So Anna and I were out of the country a lot of the time and, you know, running courses without our phones on. So having somebody back at base who could just juggle everything else that was going on and thinking about what's coming next, because we were in the here and now and what we needed was somebody actually looking forward.
And in that, I'd just love to explore that a bit more as well, because there's something about when doing the sort of work that you do that's, you know, that is delivery with a client, but there's also the pipeline. That sort of sales pipeline that's ahead. How was that for both of you? And I know Anna, you know, sales is a part of your background. Was it easy? Was it always right? I'm doing this now, but I've got an eye on 6 months away, or was it hard to juggle?
It's weird in our business because the lead time is incredibly long. Yeah. So the good news is you form partnerships. So we yet don't have a client who hasn't come back. But that's also because of the quality of our work. But once you're in there for a long time. But it also takes a long time to recruit a client. So that's just the nature of the business.
Yeah, okay.
And Anna's really good on this. It's one of those things of keeping your foot on the gas all the time. And that was hard when we were doing a lot of delivery and we didn't have anybody else, because our first big corporate piece of work took us to the States and then Europe and then onto Asia, and you know, we were on this huge roll that we were going through, but you know, by the time you come back, if you're not careful, there's nothing in front, you know, there's nothing in front of you. So it is one of those things where it just, you can never take your foot off the gas on that one.
Good advice. You have to find a way of doing the do, but also having the foot on the new business gas at the same time.
Always,
And then from there, you started bringing in, I guess, associates or leaders as they are within Shine. And I know this, as I've said in the intro, I'm one of those leaders, very proud to be.
You certainly are.
And how was that, or what precipitated that move to go, right, we actually need more people to do the do?
Well, it's quite personal. Shall I, a personal story? Because we had been traveling and my younger daughter had her SATs, which is like an exam, you know, at the last year of primary school. And were we coming back from Australia? I think we came back from Australia. And we were supposed to go to New York again. And my daughter sat on my lap and said, "Mommy, I need you here. You cannot go away again. I have my SATs next week. And I just need you." And of course, she didn't. In the week, she was absolutely fine because I gave them chocolate, hot chocolate every morning, and she never talked to me once. But she, you know, and I said, "Oh my God." And I knew as well, I didn't want to go, you know. I mean, I was like, no, I want to be here now, you know, and be a mom. And I just called Cal and said, sorry. And she's her goddaughter as well. I just said, Luli just said to me, "I can't go." And then, you know, we both, funny enough, talked to the same person without knowing of each other. So Cal talked to Mandy, who is one of our best leaders, including you, Richard, of course. You know, so she called her and I called her. And Mandy said, "That's really awkward. I got a call from both of you saying, don't tell the other person that I called you." And then we met and she was honest with us. She said, "You have just both called me, you know, but you're not talking to each other." So we said, "Oh, why don't we all meet in London and talk to each other?" And we did, because we were in London anyway. And then Mandy stepped up and learned, you know, the timeline and everything she needed to learn, I think, on the flight with Cal and before, and stepped in, you know, and did a great job. It was a very difficult client and it was not a very nice venue. And it was really not ideal circumstances, but she stepped up. And then we realized we are replaceable, you know, because we have this idea as well, I'm not replaceable and only I can run it. And frankly, that's not true. So again, we were forced by outside, funny enough, we were forced by, it's quite a pattern that I hadn't detected, but we were forced by outside elements.
It's such a pivotal moment for the business. Yeah. I mean, I think bringing in people to support you on the administrative side of things is one thing, but you can stay very close. But the moment you start having leaders actually delivering your work out in the world was very pivotal. And Anna and I always knew that we didn't want it to be this Anna and Cal show, but we sort of found ourselves getting into that situation where people just assumed that we were going to be the ones showing up.
Right.
And so we put a lot of really thorough work into training up the leaders, as you know, bringing people together, making sure they were very confident. We've got a very kind of robust process around that to ensure that they're not only really good at what they do, but really robust in their delivery. And the other thing is we selected them in a way where they all came from really interesting backgrounds. So actually in Mandy's case, I knew her from Nike days, but everybody's either had some kind of corporate background, people have lived around the world, languages, all that kind of thing. But it was just really important to us that we had people who were out there representing the brand, where Anna and I might have been in Australia and somebody else might have been in America. And it was such a pivotal moment. But I mean, obviously your business can then grow exponentially when you don't have to be at every single piece of work. So all of a sudden you can run streams of work instead of just one-off workshops. And you need time to recover in between them, you know. So
yeah.
Big moment for business.
And as I say, for the sort of business model you've got, really important to be able to do that, to be in many places at the same time versus the one place. And were there any, you sort of touched on it a bit there, Cal, were there any sticky moments with clients who are like, "No, I've bought you two and I want just you two," or were people open to, look, as you said, we've got these amazing leaders, they are extremely well trained, they will do as good a job as?
That's a good question. I think some of our existing clients were a little bit, "Oh yeah, but it will be you and Nana, won't it?" But I think that was more just because we'd built the relationship with them. New clients, it was just the way we went into it, I think, you know, with the discussion of who's the best leader for your business, you know. So I think it was much easier with new clients. And then, of course, the leaders went in, did an extraordinary job and got amazing feedback. And, you know, you only need that once for people to then start going, actually, you know, it's Richard I want back, or it's Mandy I want back, or Lucy I want back, rather than actually asking for us. So people don't expect it now.
That, as you said, that allowed you to really, the sort of exponential growth started at that point. And I think this will be really interesting for people listening who maybe in a similar kind of business, you know, delivery of product and service, that it's from the founders, and it's really that point of, you know, where the next level of growth kind of kicks in. And so sort of moving on again from that, I like the way we're sort of tracking this sort of chronologically, and more recently you've taken some more decisions about the structure of the business and bringing some more people in. Can you share a bit about that?
It was a bit more forced than we liked it to. So I got burnout during COVID. I had huge problems with my eldest teenager, and I had to step away for a couple of months. So I think in total, you know, it was probably 5 months. And I realized that I was quite vulnerable, and, you know, I couldn't really guarantee, you know, it's very unlike me, because I always think I can do everything. And you know, and then we realized, and Cal was a bit like, you know, I'm now doing a lot of this on my own, but I really don't enjoy it. And I, if I'm honest, I would like to do less as well. So we just decided it's time to bring, you know, people in who are a bit younger, who are a bit, you know, who are hungry, who know us, and who want to make the corporate world a more human place. And we also had huge plans to expand the business to different target groups. So we are now working with rising stars. We're working with senior and mid-level, with senior women. But we also wanted to work with women like us, you know, who, you know, are probably, let's say, 45 to 60. So we had huge plans, and we just knew we couldn't do it on our own. And we wanted to do the things we are really good at. Yeah. So to Cal, you talk for yourself, but for me, it's, you know, product, which I love, it's delivery, it's clients mainly. Yeah. That's what I love. So, so we just brought in, we said we need an MD to run the business. We need somebody to help us, you know, with marketing more. I mean, we already had a head of brand, but, you know, so it was natural. We had built a digital platform as well. We needed somebody with that skill, which was definitely not ours. So it was natural. It was conscious. And I think it was the right decision.
So this time, rather than kind of when you brought Mandy in, it was like that was that forced, oh my God, you know, this is a moment where of need, sort of necessity being the mother of invention. This was more of a, well, as you say, Anna, and thank you for sharing that about your, where you were post burnout, and just, look, we need some more people in the business to really help this grow. But it sounds like you had a little bit more space and time to work out who you wanted in what positions. Is that
well, we had COVID.
Right? Our old friend COVID, the creator of time and space. Yes.
Yeah, I think when we brought the leaders in, although it was sort of forced in one sense, it was also time. So it was a fortuitous moment when we got pushed into it. Whereas I think probably this time round with bringing Steph in as MD and starting to think about a leadership team, it was a little bit forced in the sense that, you know, Anna definitely needed to be her space to be able to deal with what was going on in her personal life. But I also was, I don't think, being as productive as I could, because I just sort of felt like I was trying to do everything and not do it terribly well. And so I think we also needed a big injection of energy into the business. And so to bring in an MD was also the time where our wonderful Tamsin, who you know well, our brand director, was coming back from working 2 day week, having had a second child. So she was back full time. And then we brought in our third member of the leadership team, Lara, to deal with partnerships and coaching. And that, you know, has created this lovely, stable, energetic level within the organization that allows Anna to think a bit more about future vision, you know, for sure, to do the things that we like to do, but to be able to step back a bit and actually do some of the thinking rather than running the day-to-day of the business. And they're doing a cracking job, really. Love it. Makes such a difference.
It sounds there like you've really doubled down on the belief, you know, really focus on your strengths, because that's where your energy is going to come from. So if this is your strength, as say, Anna, like, you know, the product and the strategy for the business, then that's what I'll do. And you've brought in other people with amazing skills, strengths and experience to do other things. What is it meant kind of practically for both of you in terms of, are you still doing like all the hours or have you cut back? What's happening?
Well, Anna would work 7 days a week if we let her. So I'd love myself. But so I've gone to a 3-day week, which is shocking and exhilarating, actually. I probably tried to cram 5 days into three, but I now work Monday, Tuesday, Thursdays. I don't work Wednesdays and Fridays, and I absolutely love the space that it gives me. And I don't actually work during those days, but there's something, it's when a lot of stuff bubbles up for me. It's when, by doing completely different things, for me, it gives me the energy that I a much greater energy to come back into the business for the 3 days I do during the week. Actually, I'm still learning, honestly. I'm only 4 months into it, I think, but and I haven't got it all right yet, but it's honestly a game changer for me.
And what is it, Cal, if you're there on a Wednesday and something bubbled up and you're like, oh, I really want to tell someone about this like now, or something else that sort of occurs re the business, but you go, I really should wait. What helps you wait until the Thursday?
Well, again, when Anna and I were talking about not working full time in the business, I said to Steph, so would you prefer us to take a different day off during the week so that there's always one of us there, or would you like us both off at the same time? And she very quickly said, I'd like you both off at the same time so that we can have I can have a whole day without you both. And it was absolutely fabulous. It was great music to our ears. But you know, partly I actually do genuinely feel that now, is that the team has a day when we're not around, and it's actually they know that we're not going to be calling on them. So I think it's as much for them as it is for me. I mean, if something came up that it radically thought about, I'd drop it on the WhatsApp group. But I mean, you know, we're not saving lives here. There's rarely something that can't wait 24 hours before we talk about it. But I do think, I think giving the team space is a really healthy thing for them, and something that they appreciate, though you'd probably have to ask them that. Maybe they want us to work less, actually.
Well, let's see how it evolves over time, I suppose. And Anna, for you, you know, we sort of started talking about your mojo, and here it is at the 10. Has this easing back or more focused, right? It's these 3 days a week rather than spreading myself over five. Has that helped your mojo?
Well, what helps me is that I have 3 days with lots of meetings, yeah, because that's when all the meetings are. And then I have secretly a day for myself where I actually get some work done, you know, where I can design things, where I can read things. So I absolutely love it. But I also love that I don't have to do it. You know what I mean? So I have this freedom. So I do work a lot sometimes on a weekend or on a Wednesday or on a Friday, because I think I can if I want to. But this freedom of not having to do it and having the space in my diary, you know, where I don't have meetings, you know, and I can go to my whatever hypnotist, or I can have a massage, or do things I need to do or want to do, that is really positive. And I have to say, our whole company is on 4.5 week days, because we believe in that. You know, we don't think anybody should work on a Friday afternoon, and that hasn't changed anything. So it helps me tremendously. But as Cal says, I find it really difficult to restrain myself to it, you know, to say not sending an email on a Wednesday. I think I've probably never done, because, you know, I just forget about it. But I think it's really positive. The freedom, yeah. You know, if you take it or not, yeah. But at least you've got it. Yeah. And yeah. Because there's nothing, actually, especially for founders, you always, it's a little bit like a mom, you know, you always feel guilty because you never have done it all and you never have done enough. And just not to have that constantly hanging over your shoulder, and to know, actually, you know, I'm doing something and I'm not supposed to. I find that quite helpful.
It sounds like that. That freedom of expectation is what I'm hearing from you. Is like, I'm not expected by the team or clients maybe to be doing something Wednesday, but it's up to me, my choice. If I want to put my energy into some design today, I can. Or as you say, what's really good for me is going to see a massage therapist or whatever I want to do.
Yeah.
Or also when we are in London, we can actually now go to the theater, you know, or go for lunch with someone, which we wanted to do in the last 10 years, you know. So stupid things like that. You go to London, you don't only think about clients and whom to meet, but you're thinking about actually what's on in the Tate, you know, and you suddenly, I mean, and you might not do it, but the luxury of knowing you could is lovely. So, I mean, we should have done it earlier, frankly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I should have done it earlier. Just, I'm going to ask you a question about looking back, and then we're going to look forward. Mm. So, is there, if I ask each of you, is what would you have done differently if you look back at the 9 years? Is there a key lesson, you know, because there's lots of potential founders and founders listening to this, that, you know what, we would have done that differently with the benefit of hindsight, which is a wonderful thing, obviously. Does anything come up?
Yeah, I would have recruited people faster and more.
Yeah, right, so got that support team in.
I think we should have expanded, you know, faster.
Got it. So that's quite clear. And Cal, for you?
It's funny, I'm not a big one for regrets, because I think we've learned loads of lessons over time. So I couldn't tell you if we had our time all over again, would I do anything different? I agree with Anna, we probably brought people in earlier, but I don't feel like there was any sort of massive change I would have made. There was a point, I think, after a couple of years where when we first started, we were running open courses, as in bringing individuals into courses. And it's absolutely lovely. We both love running them because you have different women from different companies and different industries all coming together, and you see all the cross-fertilization that goes on, and which is fabulous. But it's not a great business model, honestly. Well, two things about it. One is that, you know, it just wasn't enough impact for us. We're both impact junkies, so we needed to go down the route of getting into a big corporate our first big corporate piece of work was 200 women. You know, we really were able to make a massive difference, and there was an incredible force of these women coming back into the business. So it was partly about impact, but from a business model point of view, it's not great, because when you're selling one place times 40, as opposed to selling 40 places times one, you know, the whole sales process is so different. And so although it's a long process, we're selling a much higher, it's up to the business to find those 40 women, not for us to go and find them individually. So I think I would have got into, and actually Anna's husband told us to do that, probably on day one, and we ignored him.
Yeah, so maybe listening
to listening the advice.
You actually know better. But I think that's probably something that would have just got going on quicker instead of, it was fine. Yeah. But there's nothing major that I think that I would have done wildly different, I don't think.
Okay, so thanks for the sort of a bit of the look back. Now I'd just like to project forward into the future, and I know you're quite early into the new management team, and you doing it a little bit less in terms of days a week. So what's next for you personally, and for Shine as a business?
Well, Richard, we do have a dream, and that dream we have since a long time, which is bringing Shine to every girl and every woman in the world, or even going further, having life skills taught in every school rather than chemistry or geography, or maybe in addition to, where people learn the tools which are life tools, you know, which help you to interact with other people in a better way, become a better communicator, and get more clarity and confidence and influence. So we are very keen on scaling Shine and bringing it to more women, because we work with very privileged women at the moment, which is great. A group we belong to ourselves, but, you know, we would love to expand. And it is easily doable. You know, it's not difficult. We just didn't have the headspace to do it, you know, and that's something that is very close to our heart since a long time.
Right. Okay. So dream, big ambition, and I know you use the language like a bigger game. So this sounds like
a bigger game.
It is a bigger game.
Yeah. I mean, how are you going to do that, and what help and support do you need? Because there's lots of people listening today who maybe want to get involved. Cal, what's the plan?
Yeah, it's we're probably at dream rather than strategy level at the moment, but honestly, I think there's a couple of things really. First of all, to say is that, you know, as this leadership team really starts to bed in, it's a fantastic opportunity for Anna and I to really start thinking about our legacy beyond the corporate world. So this is where Anna and I get excited about thinking about what this might look like. I cannot tell you, I mean, even these privileged women that Anna talks about, it's still utterly gobsmacks me that less than 5% of these women we work with have ever done work around their personal values. It is so fundamental to understanding your future, what makes you tick, the decisions you make in your life, all of that. And so, you know, if we only did that for every child in school, you know, we would fundamentally set them off on a journey, a life's journey that would be game changing. So I think, you know, we will start to go down this route. And obviously my background at the Nike Foundation means that we've got a lot of contacts in that world, in terms of, you know, how do we expand beyond the corporate world. I have a sort of slight, funny enough, something that holds me back around doing this is that there are so many charities and organizations and NGOs that are working in the field of girls and women, that what we really keen not to do is just to become another charity doing another little piece of work over here. So our approach to this is to really think of this as partnership. So what we bring is this deep, deep skill of understanding what it takes to empower young women or empower women. And that's what we bring. So what we've got to think about is how do we scale that with a partner who has access but doesn't necessarily have this kind of content that we have and this kind of skill set that we have. So our approach to this is very much from a partnership point of view. So if anybody listening to this has got ideas for us, we are really, really open to that, because I think that is the next leg on this journey for us.
Wonderful. Well, you heard it here. Anyone who's in this space, who knows the sort of partner, works with that partner, get in touch with me and I'll connect you with Anna and Cal. And we'll
thank you. Who knew you'd be a connector?
Well, I'll try. Wonderful. So last sort of question really, and sort of goes back a bit to where we were at the beginning in terms of your mojo and how to keep it high. I'd love to get a sense of the things that you both need to do almost on a daily basis. I'm talking about habits here, really, that if I do these things, I get these things done, I know, in the morning or at some point during the day, I've got a better chance of a high mojo day. Anna, do you have some things like that?
What I do every day is a ritual that comes from the shamanic world, where I ground myself and I look at whatever is in front of me as a challenge from four different perspectives. And that really helps me. And when I do that in the morning while I walk my dogs, then I have a better day.
Wow, got it. It might not surprise you that you're the first person to talk about shamanic rituals on the podcast, but I think we could probably do a whole one on that.
Yeah,
wow, amazing. Yeah. Okay. Fabulous. So that's your routine or ritual. Cal, how about you? What do you need to do?
Ian, nothing so exciting. Exercise always for me. It's I'm a morning exercise person. I show up so differently when I do something in the morning. So, I run a couple of times a week. I spin, I walk the dog, I do some strength and conditioning. It doesn't matter. As long as I do something every day, I am a better human for it. The other thing I do when I sit down is I set some intention for the day, and it's less about, you know, I'll have a look and see where my diary is, but it's much more about how I want to be today than it is, rather than what I'm going to do today. So, you know, particularly if I know I've got something tough coming up or a tricky conversation or something, I find it really helpful to set intention. And it is, it's actually really helpful. It really actually changes the way I show up, and it's I can do it in seconds. It doesn't have to be a very long thing to do.
So that's as you said, it's the exercise and the how do I want to be today really just sets up that day that you want it to be.
Really does. I even that sometimes will make me decide whether I'm going to be you know, doing a meeting standing or on a phone or on Zoom or whatever. So, it changes actually how I might go about that conversation too.
Yeah.
All that session, whatever.
Fabulous. Well, look, we kind of got to the end of our time, and I just want to thank you, Cal, Anna, for sharing the history of Shine for Women, where you've come from and everything you've learned along the way. You know, hugely successful business. So thank you so much for joining the Mojo podcast today.
It's just such a pleasure. It's actually lovely to kind of, it's almost a bit of a reminisce. So it's lovely. And thank you, because you're very much part of it, Richard. So just a joy to do that today. Thank you.
Yeah, I think it was really nice for us to look back and even helps our understanding of our journey. So thank you, Richard. Mm. It was really lovely to do this with you.
Another fabulous conversation with a female founding duo creating huge impact. As I said, I know them well, but this conversation was so full of reflection that there was so much more new ground for all of us to discover. Always so grateful to my guests. I just ask the questions and they bring the insight and inspiration. In terms of takeouts, again, so many, so I'm going to pick a few and I'm sure you'll have your own. I'm going to start with passion. A core theme from across this series for sure. And it was Cal's reflection that whilst having passion has always been vital for her in her career, it's a new higher level of passion that she's found as a founder. And I think this relates to people like Anna and Cal understanding their core purpose and being true to it. More to come from me on purpose in the near future, by the way. And that pivotal moment when they realized that they were indeed replaceable. And instead of this creating angst, it created opportunity to grow the business. So maybe we all need to ask this of ourselves, whether you're a founder or an employee. If I'm replaceable, what does this now allow me to do, rather than what do I need to fear? And then the last takeaway, well, you didn't actually hear this one as we discussed it afterwards off air, but I think it's really important to share. And it was all about celebrating, or rather not taking the time to celebrate enough. They both reflected on the fact that they could have done more of this during the lifespan of Shine and the amazing success that Shine has had, but they felt compelled often to keep going and not stop and take the time to celebrate. I always encourage taking the time to celebrate key moments, to stop and feel that lovely glow of celebration. Whether it's a major big win or kind of a small win on a rather average week, they all count towards our mojo. So thanks again to Anna and Cal. I really appreciate your time. Please do rate and review this episode if you've got plenty from it, and hoping that you did. And join me next time for the final episode in this fourth series of the Mojo podcast. And it's going to be a fun one, and I'm looking forward to it, because partly the reason why I began this podcast was after a conversation with my guest next week. Okay, until next time, I hope your mojo continues to flow.